Welcome to Campfires and Color Wars, a podcast about summer camps and the stories we love to tell about them. Like the time on a day off, we watched an episode of Rescue 911 and started talking like that the entire rest of the day off. Maybe you had to be there. Hi, I'm Micah Hart, and for the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to press pause on the world around us and transport back to the days of our adolescence, when the school year was just one long rest hour between days at camp. If you have a camp memory you'd like to have featured at the top of the show, you can always email us your short stories to summercamppod@gmail.com. And if you're going to take the time to do that, why not give us a review, give us a rating on iTunes, so we can continue to reach as many former campers as we can. Quarantine week, God knows what, continuing on, and you know, still trying to make the best of it, just like everybody. I want to at the top give a quick shout out to anybody who's new to the podcast. We've actually seen a pretty nice little grow in our audience since the quarantine started, because I think specifically because of our game show we've been doing, Jewish Geography Zoom Racing, every Saturday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. We are streaming episodes live on Facebook. Check it out. It's really fun. It's fun if you're Jewish. I think it's fun even if you're not Jewish. If for no other reason, then you're probably just like, what is happening on this show? But it's been a highlight of quarantine for me, and we're getting really great feedback from the people watching. So please keep watching. We'll keep doing it. And again, you can catch that on our Facebook page, facebook.com/summercamppod, every Saturday night at 9. This episode was originally meant to be in a different format. I've done a few different kinds of episodes where we've done sort of homages to other podcasts that I'm a fan of. And I've been wanting to do an homage to one of my favorite podcast, which is Are You Talking U2 to Me, or Are You Talking REM Re-Me, done by Scott Aukerman and Adam Scott, where they break down each episode, so to speak. You kind of have to listen to it to know what I mean by that. They'll take an album from, you know, in the U2 series, they take a U2 album and kind of go through each song and talk about it and end up on a thousand different tangents. It's an acquired taste, I imagine, if you're not familiar with Scott Aukerman's over, if you will. But I've been wanting to do something around that for a while with Indigo Girls, specifically with their album Indigo Girls, because for me, that was such a huge part of the camp experience. Even though I did not like them growing up, I would go so far as to say I hated them, because I was a dumb boy and I didn't know any better. All I knew is that all the girls were obsessed with them, and they did nothing but walk around singing Closer to Fine, and that drove me crazy. So I thought it might be interesting to walk through some of their discography in a similar manner to Are You Talking U2 to Me, or also Analyze Fish, another Scott Aukerman podcast. And just couldn't ever settle on the format for how to do it. And so then we decided to end up doing it. Our schedules aligned with today's guest, Rabbi Sari Laufer. She is a rabbi at Wise Congregation out in L.A. And my sister, Leia, probably another one of the reasons why I didn't like Indigo Girls growing up is because she was always listening to them. Although, as I mentioned in the episode, I liked so much else that she introduced me to. So I don't know why I had such a visceral reaction to Indigo Girls. But I apologize. Indigo Girls, if you're out there, if you're listening, your music is wonderful, and I love that you have been so important to so many people with your music. And so we just wanted to talk about that. I thought it would be an interesting episode to talk about Indigo Girls and their crossover appeal to the camp audience. And that's exactly what we did, and I think it was a lot of fun. And if you like Indigo Girls, I think you will like this episode. And if you don't like Indigo Girls, yeah, I don't know. Maybe give it a shot for a little bit, or maybe go watch some episodes of Jewish Geography Zoom Racing until it's done. But I really enjoyed this, and I hope you will too. So with no further ado, our conversation about the Indigo Girls and summer camp with Rabbi Sari Laufer and Leia Hart.
Mm-hmm.
it's hard in pandemic land to not sort of look at everything as if there's some sort of larger meaning or there's some sort of underlying narrative. And I say that to start out this episode because I've been wanting to do an Indigo Girls episode for a while. And one, I don't even know why that's the case because I was not even Indigo Girls fan growing up. But it's been on my radar for a while, and we have been talking about doing this for a while. And all of a sudden in quarantine, it feels like the absolute appropriate time to do it, because if there's one thing in my timeline that everyone seems to agree upon, aside from hopefully Jewish Geography Zoom Racing, is the Indigo Girls live concerts that they've been doing on, what is it, Thursday nights?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like a great time to talk about them. Sure. Before that, Sari and Leia, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Awesome.
Happy to be here.
I was not an Indigo Girls fan. And I think a lot of that is probably because, Leia, you were. Although maybe that's not really true, because I liked a lot of other music that you introduced me to. I think it was just that every girl at camp was so obsessed with them, and I couldn't get it. And of course, now I'm a little more mature, and I've definitely grown to like them more than previously. But I guess that's the first question I want to start with, is just, why were the Indigo Girls such an ingrained part of camp life?
I mean, I've been like trying to think about it since we even started talking about this. And I do want to say, like, I think there is a gender piece. I think I'm guessing for a lot of, you know, adolescent or pre-adolescent girls at that time, and especially, I don't know how old you guys are, but for me, you know, I met the Indigo Girls, that's in quotes, you know, in the late 80s, basically when their first album came out. And I think, you know, knowing that time, I think for a lot of girls, it was also probably wrapped up in sexuality and sexual identity and things that weren't necessarily talked about. You know, I think, so we didn't do my camp story, but I went to what we would call like Jewish camp. You know, 99% of the campers were Jewish. There were like vestiges of Jewish practice, but it wasn't a Jewish camp.
Where did you go?
I went to Camp Wayne in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. Oh, okay. Shout out to 56 Nice People Place, it's called now. That was a different address. You know, but I'm trying to remember, you know, I think I sort of met the Indigo Girls through the counselors who were college age and mostly not Jewish.
That's so interesting.
And you know, sitting around, we had, instead of Friday night services, and this was sort of like one of these funny vestiges we had, I believe it was Tuesday night. Someone listening who went to Wayne can tell me. I believe it was Tuesday night. We had what was called creative service, and different groups were in charge, and there would be a theme, like, you know, friendship or kindness. And I can just remember singing. I mean, of course it was closer to fine because of course, you know, and I don't know if it was like, I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, I think there was something about these women who, you know, were not sort of like stereotypical. They weren't models. They had acoustic guitars, right? Like, it wasn't big hair rock, which was certainly sort of like the thing. We weren't into grunge yet. And they just had this like raw power and soul and but I don't know, but I do think I think there was, and I was in an all-girls camp. We had a brother camp on the other side of the lake, but I don't think they were sitting singing Closer to Fine on a regular basis, but we were.
What about you, Leia? What was your introduction to Indigo Girls?
I was thinking about that when the original idea was to listen to the album Indigo Girls and kind of go through it track by track. And I listened to it a bunch and I was like, you know, I love this album. I love all these songs, but I don't have like that visceral reaction to these songs as I do to some of their later albums. Yeah. And I'm so glad that you agreed with me, Sari, because I was like, I'm not explaining this right. I don't know how to say this, but you totally understood what I was saying, which made me feel so much better. So it's kind of like how you grow up at camp and you just know all the songs. You don't remember ever learning them. You don't remember when you learned the blessing before the, you know, food or after the food. It's just sort of there. And I was always really just sort of enamored by my counselors. I always was like, I want to be like you. You're so cool. And whatever music they were into, I was just kind of like, yep, that's it.
Totally.
And so I was 15, so I guess that's probably like ninth grade. They played in Jackson, Mississippi, and I convinced our parents to let me go.
Was that difficult? I mean, I don't feel like that would have been that hard a conversation.
It was more, well, it was more about they didn't want me to ride in a car with another 15-year-old downtown Jackson. So Maylight Mintz took me. Aw, may her memory be a blessing. So she took me. And I just remember being like, this is really cool. And then they played Strange Fire. And I remember kind of like, I'm not breathing. Time has stood still. It was like, I have never heard sound like this. I've never heard music like this. This is just amazing harmonies, which they are famous for. But this particular song, I think, has a totally different kind of harmony scheme than really any other song. And it just kind of was like, oh, what is this? And that was it. And then I bought every album that they had available. And then from that moment on, the day it came out, I bought it. And from that moment, I have much more like specific memories related to specific albums and specific songs. Can tell you where I was when I heard it, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sari, obviously closer to fine, but is there another song that sort of leaps out to you as like the first one that grabbed you?
Oh God. My first love.
I mean, literally all of them. Like, I don't think there's, I remember also, so I was trying to do a little like of the discography. And so my first summer at camp was 1987, which was the year that Indigo Girls came out, like the first studio album. And so like, I'm guessing that like, there had to have been some counselor who was at, you know, University of Georgia, right, or Emory, somewhere around that. Like, that had to be sort of the genesis of it, who had seen them at coffee shops and brought it to camp. Because, and I'm trying to remember, like, I remember listening to, probably Tried to Be True. I'm trying to remember, don't put Ray this Fox on the show, that I can't know, that I can't remember which song, but where it's like someone's on the bathroom floor doing her cocaine.
I wasn't gonna get it.
It's not that I love, I mean, I do, I love every song basically, other than Chicken Man, which I cannot stand and I still cannot stand.
Oh, but it's so good live.
I've seen them like hundreds of times. No, but that's fine. Okay. I won't walk your yarn.
We can still be friends.
Yeah. You know, but like, I remember hearing that and, you know, I grew up in New York City. So like, I wasn't this like totally naive, but like being like, whoa, that's like, you know, felt very subversive.
Right. So I just want to interrupt for 1 second because I'm now having a memory about Prince of Darkness that I think it was the summer before ninth grade. We made a mixtape at camp and one of my counselors put that song on it. And I remember like listening to it and being like, this song is really about something that I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, it was like cocaine. Oh my God. I mean, being like, what, like there's music about this? I mean, it really just impacted me in such a, like, this is very grown up.
Yeah.
Now, is Prince of Darkness on Indigo Girls?
The eponymous album.
Correct.
It's funny. So I was looking on Spotify today a little bit and listening to a little bit. And to me, like, I guess all of the Indigo Girls songs that I know, I just thought were all on that album.
No, they're so, like, mostly not.
Galileo, I assumed was on that album.
Nope.
What's the other one from whatever album that one's on? That I'm blanking on at the moment, that's also like super huge.
That's on Rites of Passage.
Romeo and Juliet, that's what I'm thinking of, which I know is a cover. I actually did not know that for a long, long time.
I didn't either.
Oh, yeah, because their version's amazing.
Yes.
But I assumed that those were all part of the same album. I was like, oh, no. Who knew?
No. But a lot of songs that people know are from Rites of Passage.
It's a passage, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
So
I also would say like, You and Me of the 10,000 War, you know, like I wasn't super emo as a kid. Like I wasn't, but you know, I think every adolescent has the, like, is anyone ever going to love me? Am I, you know, life is so hard. That's part of being an adolescent. And I like, so I'm thinking like You and Me of the 10,000 Wars, Love Will Come to You. Like all of these like very sweet, all Emily songs, even though like the Amy ones are like the ragers, where like I can just remember like sitting in my room or making someone a mixtape, like trying to cheer someone up, or someone making me a mixtape. And like there was always, even though my rule was always like, you can't have two songs by the same band on a mixtape. The Indigo Girls were the exception, right? Like you could always have more than one Indigo Girls song because they were always perfect. I will say, so it's funny. I texted,
not next to each other, not in a row.
No.
Okay.
So this is super funny. I texted two friends just before and was like, what was our first Indigo Girls show? Because I was trying to figure out if it was 92, which feels like that would have been really early, and I can't imagine my parents letting me go, or 94, which I know I saw them in 94. But what's funny, what I was remembering about my first Indigo Girls show, and I think to some extent, like to this day, I just most recently saw them last June, is feeling like understanding, similar to like the understanding that there's something deep in the song, like understanding that this was a place, and again, in the early 90s, like that people could come and be themselves, right? Like even then, and like I said, I grew up in New York City, and that this sense of like that people were walking in, and especially like women who were holding hands and making out and doing it in a totally comfortable way. But even then, and even though like the only place I saw them probably until college was in New York City, recognizing that there were some women in that room who couldn't do that in any other space.
Let me ask an ignorant question. Most of these questions will be ignorant.
They've never dated.
That's very not the question. Important.
their sexuality, I don't know if it's important or not to their music, although I could certainly understand for people who are gay, obviously that being a big piece of it. But there's this really funny David Spade bit from a long time ago about liking bands before he knew their sexual preferences, and being like listening to Queen and being like, yeah, these guys get it. And I was just curious, like, did you know from the beginning, or did you come to them and just like the music, and then later sort of as you got older find out that they were lesbians?
I think I always knew.
I mean, like at age 9 or 8 when I encountered them, like that I don't think I knew necessarily.
Or I didn't know what it meant necessarily.
Right. But like they have always been, right, they will say they're political artists. They made choices around performances their whole careers that were based, like not based on their sexuality, but that they wanted to make certain statements. I was just reading about it on NPR.
That's right. You sent a link.
I did.
Right,
I just
before.
Sent that quote.
So
yeah.
I put that exact little nugget of like the guitar players from camp and the stoners. Yeah. It's like, this is exactly what this is. It was such a great line.
And I always laughed, right? Because the boys who liked the girls, like they never, it was always, for me, it was always like the boys I knew who like wanted to impress girls who had learned closer to fine on the guitar.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Like that was right, like even today, by the way, I still go to Indigo Girls concerts, and it's like 98% women, and then like the 2% are men who were like trying to impress the women that they're with, and being like, "Yeah, I'll come to the Indigo Girls, totally."
Mm-hmm.
So, are there other songs that take you to specific memories from camp?
Well, I just both summers that I was on staff.
At which camp?
Jacobs. Those summers that I was on staff at Jacobs, a new album came out right before the summer. So let me see. So Swampophilia was one of those. So that must have been like 94-ish. And like I just finished high school, basically just started listening to this album, and that one has Least Complicated on it.
That's not on Indigo Girls?
Yes.
No, it's not.
It's on Swampophilia. Yeah, it's on Swampophilia.
And like really just loving that song immediately. And then as the counselor in the cabin, we listened to it all the live long day. And it was just, and you know, Micah, if you ask, like ask Amanda, you know, some of my campers are my friends and Micah's friends. Ask her. She may have a connection to them because of me. I don't know. But like, I definitely made her listen to them all the time. And so I love that particular song. I love the whole album. I mean, the Wood song is so good.
Oh, so good.
And then when I was in college, the album that has, this is where my age shows, I stop remembering things. The album that has Get Out the Map.
So that's Shaming of the Sun.
It's Indigo Girls.
No. It's Shaming of the Sun, right? That's like, yeah.
I'm amazed, by the way, that I know these songs that y'all are talking about. Or at least enough to, like, I can picture the melody. I may not know the words. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that one.
So I'm fairly certain it was this album. But, like, I bought the CD, walked to class, and on my way to class, heard the song, and then promptly skipped class for the rest of the day to sit outside and listen to the album 100 times. So it's just, there are some songs where you just, I mean, lots of bands, but especially with them, there's always like one or two on every album where you hear it and it's just like, oh, wow.
And it's funny, like I don't have like specific song memories, I think, because like they feel, and they still do, by the way, feel like the soundtrack to like my entire emotional life.
Yep. So, agreed.
I agree, like, each album, there's, like, the couple that, like, blew my mind that I listened to, by the way, I still listen to on repeat. I was trying to remember, like, 94 was the summer before I went to Israel that summer, and so I think I can remember singing, like, Least Complicated, like, on the bus with the girls I met on my Israel trip, and I also will say, and, like, this is where my, like, rabbinic side is that, like, when I look back, and I will say this again, if someone from Camp Wayne is listening, like, I had a complicated relationship with camp. And I think that like my memory and nostalgia of camp was a much better experience than my in-person experience.
Interesting. Uh-huh.
But I will say that like, when I think back to those moments sitting and singing, I mean, it was probably closer to Fine. I imagine Galileo made it in there at some point. Like, my last summer at camp was 93. So like somewhere in there, some other songs made it in, maybe
Land of Canaan. Come on.
Yeah. Land of Canaan. I think Hammer and a Nail.
Sure.
Like, I think that I wouldn't have known it then. I certainly wouldn't have had the language for it then, but like there was an experience of spirituality that I think I then went seeking in so many different ways of like that feeling was something I looked for and still look for.
Yeah. And whenever someone has gone to a show with me that I've never been to a show with before, I'm like, I need to warn you. I'm not going to talk to you because this is my church. And like,
man, it's a good thing we don't go to shows together.
But I've been with my parents. My sister and I took my parents. And like, there were a couple times where I was explaining, but like, I think for my parents to be able to see, first of all, to see them, and also be like, you have been listening to this band at this point, what, 20 years? Now it's been way longer.
Yeah, exactly.
And to say to people, like, this is my like religious experience, and having that feeling of singing and like total abandon and feeling like really free and connected to everybody around me and feeling the words kind of like in my soul. I'm like, this is like revival church tent.
Yeah.
I mean, we get that at camp. I mean, we had our camp reunion a couple years ago, and it's that same kind of like, this is a benevolent cult. But
Sari, I'm going to have to go back to this because, we were going to talk about this at the beginning, but again, I don't really plan very well, and it's also quarantine, so I use that for every excuse.
A brother.
You said you had a somewhat complicated relationship with camp, so I'm curious, what was the genesis of that?
Sure. So I went to sleepaway camp for 8 summers, the same sleepaway camp. It was the camp my dad went to.
Oh,
and
that's cool.
Yeah, maybe. It was a remarkable camp, and I still like love the camp directors to this day. They just announced their closure for the summer. And so when they sent out an email to the alumni also, and there was like a sing along on Friday. Mm-hmm. And so I joined it, which was actually very, and again, like this nostalgia, I never fit in at camp. And so, you know, it's funny, I've had this experience other places too. The group a year ahead of me is still as tight as tight can be. I see them all on social media, and I think the year behind me was, and I think my year had some of that, but I wasn't.
Leia can speak to this experience very
clearly.
That was
my year. That was my year at Jacob's Camp. I mean, I'm closer with people now than I was ever at camp. But
oh, I thought all Jewish camps were like.
Mm-mm. So I went to two camps. I also went to Gucci in Indiana, and that is where I feel like is my camp, my home.
No, it really does matter my your age
year,
group.
Yeah. My year at Jacob's Camp was a very weird year. There wasn't a lot of us. We weren't all necessarily that close. Most didn't come back for staff. It's like me and Ben and Jennifer.
I was a city kid, which was not the norm. It was mostly suburban kids.
I can see how that would be weird.
And I have some great friends. So like if they're listening, that have been a part of my life, but I didn't fit in. And I was aware of that. And I think there probably was a point where I could have switched camps and I didn't. And then it just sort of felt like, well, but now I'm like 12 or 13 and who wants to start a new camp as a 12 or 13 year old girl? That sounds even more miserable.
And you were a camper there for 8 years? Were you ever on staff there or staff
not there
elsewhere?
I was, for one summer, I was an educator at Camp Hess Kramer.
Okay.
Here in LA.
Oh,
yeah.
Hess Kramer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We know the original director of that camp.
Yes, we do. So I'm curious. So I, again, my discography is light, but the song that I like the most that I guess was sort of my intro into like, okay, maybe they're not as bad as I always thought they were. I mean, I really loathed them growing up. And there's no reason for it other than just like the girls just could not stop singing.
That's
how I feel about Dave Matthews, if that makes you feel better.
Yeah. Well, I don't like him that much.
Oh, I listened
either,
to all of that, but yeah.
But I really like Kid Fears.
Sure. Yeah, it's a great with Michael Stipe.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And so in kind of the original thinking of doing this episode as an homage to You Talking U2 to Me and kind of listening through to a whole album, that was the one I was like, oh, I'm just going to listen to this for a while. I'll get to the rest of it at some point. And then never did. But I really like that song.
It's a great song.
It's a great song.
I guess one question I have is Indigo Girls now, like, are they still putting out music I'm sure they're still putting out music. Are they still putting out music that is meaningful to you, or have they kind of peaked and are like in their fish?
Here's what's funny is, so you mentioned Shaming of the Sun with Get Out the Map, which is like really the last album I remember like waiting for and like loving. And then I sort of like, because I kept going to their shows, like I'm not sure there's, other than maybe the year I lived in Israel, like I'm not sure there has been a full calendar year where I haven't seen them live. I'm not sure, but I think that's probably true.
It's probably true.
You know, and there would be these moments where I was like, oh, they're playing their new stuff. But somewhere in between Shaming of the Sun and now, I realized like, I actually like a lot of their new stuff, and then went back and listened to their newer albums and was sort of like, okay, it's not the same.
Right.
And I also think that's because like the way we all encounter music is different.
Right.
Right. Like it used to be if I liked Closer to Fine, or if I liked Kid Fears, or if I liked Get Out the Map, like I had to get the whole album. And now I found
our attention span is different.
They probably didn't have a lot of Indigo Girls singles at Bebop Records.
They did at one point. I want to say like Galileo was probably a
tapers.
Single.
They had lots of tapers. People would go to shows and tape, and there was a whole big trade. I didn't do any of that.
That's funny because I traded Dead shows and Fish and all of that.
So then you know.
I did not ever
see like that.
Okay,
it's just like that.
Now to go on the dark web.
Right? So I have a couple of tapes somewhere with a bunch of other I mean, I never taped and I never traded, and I never really was in that world. But like there were a couple of songs that I had never heard before until someone had given me a couple of tapes that were like, oh, here's this song that ended up being like put out on their rarities album, like Cold as Ice. Mm-hmm. And the one that's like from one of their camps. I can't remember what the name of the song is right now. It's like I never heard the Finlandia.
Oh, Finlandia. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is what it's called. Finlandia. Oh, I just pulled that out of my butt. So I'm looking at the discography because there's like a whole set. So Shaming of the Sun was in college, and then Come On Now Social was the one after that that came out I was living in New York, got in line at 4 o'clock in the morning in front of the Beacon Theater, Manhattan, first in line, all three nights, first couple of rows. And that, so that album was great in that way. And then after that, it was sort of like, I own all of them.
Yeah, but exactly. Sort of
listen to them like less and less and less thoroughly. But because of this most recent series of shows, I did just buy the new one and I've been listening to it and it's good.
Is there an Indigo Girls stands podcast? Like, I feel like there has to be. There's a podcast for everything.
I don't know, but
I'm thinking if like not,
I,
you guys.
I will say that their interview, they interviewed on Being, and it's just, it's really, for me, I found it like really, really profound and beautiful.
All right, I'm going to say one last thing and then we're going to move on to our questionnaire, but
I would say one last thing that's funny, but go on.
Oh, please, absolutely.
No, I think it's funny, go on.
Yeah, we'll be the judge of that. No, I'm just kidding.
not that funny.
Closer to Fine, obviously, is the standard bearer for the male experience of Indigo Girls. And my sister and I, my other sister, wrote and sang a song, a parody of it, as campers are wont to do. Yeah. At Leia's rehearsal dinner for her wedding.
No one did that for me.
I'm happy to do it anytime. Just let me know.
I appreciate it.
Whip something up
Leia,
for you.
Leia, Sari, two syllables. It'll work.
It totally works, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, what's your story?
No, what I was going to say. No, I mean, it's so just, you know, I then went to college and then rabbinic school. And I would have to guess that between high school, college, and rabbinic school, I've written at least one, but probably closer to 3 or 4 papers about like biblical imagery in Indigo Girls songs.
Really?
Yeah.
So cool.
Like,
yeah.
Which I wish I could find. Like they're
can
gone
you,
forever.
Can you remember a title or a general?
I mean, for sure, Strange Fire. Like I'm sure.
I could see it.
Yeah, for sure. And also if you, this is now, like when I did source sheets, I still do source sheets. I started, almost all of them actually, like at some point were titled by Indigo Girls songs. Now I've expanded and they always have a song title as the like general title, but it definitely started from like, I just remember being, I guess it must've been in college when I'd taken like some biblical theory and biblical narrative classes and being like, like they're definitely, you know, and Emily is a theologian's kid, a preacher's kid. And so she talks about, she explicitly uses some of the imagery and stuff. And so I was like, ooh.
Leia, have you found any ways to, have you found any ways to weave Indigo Girls into your professional life?
I mean, Indigo Girls, social work, it's all the same.
Sure.
I mean, the whole social justice piece, I think, is very clear. You know, the, you know, kind of the major distinguishing factor of social work between other kind of mental health helping professions is the concept of social justice. And the Indigo Girls have always been sort of leaders in that and kind of helped shape like what's important to me. So I was a women's studies major in college. And I feel pretty sure that my decision to get there had a lot to do with what I learned about myself and about the world from their music.
Very cool. I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but Jennifer Goodwin, who was my camp girlfriend for one day, one of my memories of her is her and her friends Buffy and Hava singing Closer to Fine in the talent show and her telling me that, you know, she wanted to be an actress someday. So I keep waiting to see her up on like, you know, carpool karaoke or, you know, lip sync battle or whatever, singing an Indigo Girls song.
Yeah.
Who knows? All right, let's move on to our Campfires and Color Wars questionnaire. Title still pending. All right, Sari, we've heard Leia's before, so we're going
to
focus on you.
You don't get to do it.
Leia, you're welcome to chime in.
You jump in, please.
Okay, I might.
Please do.
All right, number one, tell us about your most romantic camp experience.
Oh, I wasn't allowed to answer this question, P.S.
That's probably true. Yeah, that's true. Still not.
I feel like, is it everyone's name? I had my first kiss at camp.
How was it?
It was lovely. It was great.
Really?
It was like, it was, I can bizarrely, like I remember exactly where we were, like Witch Hill overlooking, you know, it's very East Coast. We were overlooking the lake. It was probably, no, it actually probably was not twilight because then we would have gotten caught. It was probably dark. At the end of a social, right? Because we had girls' side and boys' side, so we had socials.
Right. So okay. So
And it was sweet. And like, talk about nostalgia, right? That's a.
And so was that the start of something, or because I know with the boys,
yeah,
and girls
we dated
camp sometimes,
for that whole summer.
Okay. And yeah. You would see each other just that one night a week at the social, or were
no?
There other...
I think at that point, I think by that point it was probably like two, three nights a week. It was more often as we got older.
Gotcha. Okay, that's pretty sweet.
And most summers for me, the socials were absolutely miserable. But
I'm impressed that you enjoyed it. If for no other reason than anecdotally, I would say most people hated
kisses,
their first.
No, it was like a sweet. I mean, again, maybe it's nostalgia, right? Like right. Maybe it was terrible, and I thought sure. So at the time. But you
look back on it finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number two, tell us about your best camp performance. Did you ever sing an Indigo Girls song at camp in any kind of talent show?
No.
I did.
No. Did you? I did not. No, I didn't. I didn't perform so much. So here's the actual like good story. So my camp, and people who know me know this, like people who've known me since camp, we had mandatory dance and cheer. Like that was one of our like activities during the day and during the week. And I was terrible at it. And so that I'm sure this didn't happen multiple times, but like I have memories. It feels like every summer they'd be like, okay, like let's all get in height order. Everyone, you know, shorter in the front, except like Sari, why don't you go to the back? Cause I just was like not very good at it. So I can remember doing a day. It was, to Joy and Pain. Remember like Joy? Bump, bump it up. Yeah. So that was my most memorable.
Keep it going.
Apparently.
Keep it going.
Cause cause I still know the dance, by the way. Like I can
oh,
still
I
remember
love that
it.
Song.
But I was not a like I'm gonna perform in front of the whole crowd solo type of gal.
And Leia, what song did you sing? Was it Closer to Fine? Is it possible that it wasn't?
No, it was not Closer to Fine. I have feelings about that song. It actually might have been the summer that I was not at camp. It was like 96. I think I was just home, but Judy was at camp. Judy Golden was a unit head, I think. And so she and Ben Dorfman came to the house for a night off, and Ben had learned how to play Strange Fire on his guitar. And Judy has a higher voice and I have a lower voice, and we worked on it.
Nice.
And we sang it in the Talmadge Talent Show. And it was awesome, if I do say so myself.
Wow.
That's cool. I was kind of just picturing you just like bursting through the door of the dining hall and just like grabbing a microphone out of someone's hand and just breaking into song. But that's good too.
I mean, I would do that now.
Now, right. That I may do now, but I would not have done at camp. No.
All right, Sari, tell us about your most embarrassing camp moment.
So I'm not trying to weasel out of this. Like, I think I don't have one because I was very inward. So one of the big things that they used to do at our camp as like a way of embarrassing people, we raised and lowered the flag every morning and evening. And like, it was like a big deal if your like underwear or bra were hung up on the flagpole, like they would like pull it, like you'd get to flag raising and it should be empty and there would be something like waving. But the irony is like now I actually don't remember if it was ever mine. I remember being embarrassed a lot at camp. I think like I never had the right clothes. I didn't know this. I didn't know that. But I don't have like a single like you are up at the front of the room and something horrible happens.
That's good.
So I'm sure that did happen. But
I don't wish that upon you.
I was an awkward kid. Like it was all awkward. It felt like it was all embarrassing.
I don't think I'm trying. We had flag raising at Jacob's a couple times a week, but I don't know if I remember bras. It doesn't seem like some of that would have flown.
Yeah, I don't really remember that.
No pun intended. All right, number four, top or bottom bunk?
I think bottom. Probably, again, it might not have been by choice by me. I feel like the cooler kids were always on the top, so I was probably bottom.
Well, as someone who was a top bunk aficionado and a cool kid, like, yeah, that's probably
yeah.
true.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
Leia, were you top or bottom?
Different camps, different places. At Gucci, I was bottom, and at Jacobs, I was top.
Fascinating.
Yes, because the distance between the top and the bottom bunk at Jacobs were too short for me, so I couldn't sit up in the bottom bunk. So it was never comfortable. I guess I was always tall. I don't remember always being tall, but I remember that at Gucci, the bottom bunk seemed significantly lower to the ground with a lot more distance in between, a lot more height, and I could sit up comfortably.
See, I was thinking that it would have been because you would get to camp later at Gucci and all the tops would be gone. Although I still
that might be true. That might be true. But I did have a top bunk a couple times. I think
we also had a lot of cabins that were not bunked, that were just like beds.
Oh,
really?
From what I remember. I hope someone from Wayne is listening to this. They're going to call in and be, oh, yeah, it was fancy. And they're going to call in and be like, you have
gold plated toilets.
Nothing you said was true. No, apparently, like, since I don't know, I think since I went, it has some of the renovations have made it fancier than it was.
All of the camps have gotten fancier since we went, and it is very, it makes me feel like a grumpy old man, which I guess I am technically.
Oh my God.
At least
we used to do our own laundry. We used to do our own laundry.
We did not.
And when my son started going to camp and there wasn't anything about laundry, I emailed the camp director and I was like, they're not doing their laundry. And she's like, no, we send it out. And I was like, what kind of millennial hipster bullshit is this? Like, how are my kids going to learn how to do their laundry if they don't learn it at camp? I was so mad.
It's so true. I mean, I remember going to college.
Is that an activity? Can I sign him up for laundry?
Yep.
I remember going to college and people not knowing how to do laundry.
Right?
And being like, what are you talking about?
What is the matter with you?
Yeah.
Ours
people were like, yeah, I did go to camp. We did not do our laundry.
Yeah, I was going to say that did not happen.
All right, number five. In this time of quarantine, when nostalgia is the play, what's the thing that you miss the most about camp right now?
I mean, I think it is. It's what I just said, right? It's the reason I signed on to that sing-along, right? Was that feeling.
That feeling.
That even, you know, and I think even for me who had this sort of it was not the happiest time of my life, but that feeling of sort of safety. And I think now with the nostalgia of like the totally carefree, you know, like, yes.
No consequences.
No consequences, right. Like lots of drama, but not real, you know, and
real,
so I think that feeling and I said, like, I think that sense of spirituality and connectedness, you know, I think, you know, especially because like I wasn't a good athlete, I wasn't certainly a good dance and cheer participant, right? Like I wasn't an actress, like I didn't have my thing. The only time everyone loved me at camp was during we called it the Apache Relay. I think they can't call it that anymore. But
like color war?
I think it was actually part of color war.
Okay.
We did an intense color war. Like
how many days was your color war? Was it more than one?
I was like, was it six? I think it was four.
God.
It was intense.
That is insane.
Like, oh yeah. I can remember boys' side, like boys crying at the end of color war when they lost. Like it was intense. But so the Apache Relay was a big event during color war, but there was a trivia section. And literally, it was like the only time of the year when everyone was like, yes, we have Sari on our team. Like, yes.
Nice.
But I think like at that creative service, which was the singing, right? Like, and at campfires, like none of that mattered, right? Like you didn't need to be cool. You didn't need to be in the cool clique. Like you didn't need, because someone was going to have their arm around you and it didn't, like none of that mattered. And so I think like just that sense of like, I don't know. Yeah, the nostalgia of and the just like sweetness of that time.
And are you both tuning in religiously? I assume to the Indigo Girls concerts on Thursdays.
Yeah. I hope my boss is not listening. I have scheduled like all of these Zooms to be like, nope, sorry, I cannot meet at 4 o'clock. It's 4 o'clock our time. So, like,
I mean, I had stuff, and I was like, no, I cannot go because I have to.
I just fully was like, sorry, I'm busy. Yeah.
And are they doing? Different sets each week, or
so this Thursday is the last. Well, in theory, this Thursday is the last one. So the first one they did, I don't even remember like what the topic was.
I think they just
and then they did Rites of Passage start to finish, which I cannot tell you. I've seen a couple of different groups do album shows, and it is just the best. I love it.
Yeah.
Because there's so many songs that they do not play anymore. Virginia Woolf, Number two, all-time favorite Indigo Girls song, Cedar Tree, Airplane, Nashville, of those.
That album really is so good.
Do you know about Ode to Joy in Cedar Tree?
I can sort of hear it.
So I was one of those things where, so there's this last song. It's the very last song on this album. And like at the very end, very quietly, they play Ode to Joy kind of in like the very slow part of the song. And I had probably heard the song 1,000 times, but I was like in bed, I couldn't sleep. I was listening to it and it was like this, wait, what was that? Like an Easter egg in a song. This was like a long time ago. And I just always felt like, oh, I'm so cool. I know that. I totally know about that. So then they did that. And then last week was a request show. And then this Thursday they are being interviewed by, Abby Wambach, who's a soccer player, and Glennon Doyle, who is a writer and activist, and she is obsessed with them.
All right, I'm gonna ask one last question, then we'll move to Bitches and Roses. But now, since you brought it up, I gotta ask, give me your top five Indigo Girls songs.
All right, Strange Fire.
Oh, she's like, got it.
I know. Strange Fire, Virginia Woolf, and then I have like, the rest is all sort of a tie. I love Hand-Me-Downs, Let It Be Me, the whole like last five songs on Rites of Passage. I'm sure there are more, but
the last five songs on Rites of Passage, is that like the Beatles like medley of songs on Abbey Road? Like me and Mr. Mustard,
no,
like just kind
just
of blends together.
This great series of songs that they hardly ever play ever. And then played them the other night in this album.
Gotcha.
This album concert.
All right, Sari, put you on the
spot. I mean, I'm literally like Googling Indigo Girls songs because I'm like, I don't even know. I don't know how to begin.
My first two are always the same.
Hungry
the
Like the Wolf,
sort of
Thriller.
This is not necessarily in order. I would say, I mean, You and Me of the 10,000 Wars up there. I actually, despite being as New York as they come, Southland in the Springtime just gives me like great joy. I love Reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Love Will Come to You because I just have like so many things wrapped up in that. Mm-hmm. Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally,
that was their number one most requested song. Can you believe that?
That's so interesting. I like literally everything. Like I'm Wood Song.
Or number two most requested song. Wood Song is number one. Yeah.
And I, you know, a couple of their covers are like
Uncle John's Band.
Uncle John's Band.
So good.
Midnight
We're
Train
best friends
to Georgia.
Now, Micah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I'm like, ooh, Midnight Train to Georgia.
Oh, I know that one.
Yeah. I think I said this to both of you that like it is the only music I have been listening to in quarantine. And I think some of that goes back to that sort of space of spirituality. And especially because like I can't be with my community in the way that I'm used to. And like, I think because of the like nostalgia piece, but literally, except when I'm in the car with my children who only listen to Disney Pandora right now, like it is all I can listen to. Like nothing else.
It's safe. It's soothing in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's weird. I've been writing a journal during quarantine, and for whatever reason, I started listening to one very specific song. I listened to Led Zeppelin's No Quarter. That's the only song I listen to when I write. And I don't know why, but now it's a thing. So I'm going to keep doing it because I keep writing. All right, let's move on to Bitches and Roses, AKA Roses and Thorns, AKA Coals and Diamonds, AKA Strawberries and Lemons, AKA Peaks and Valleys, AKA Pals and Wells. It's a chance to share some good things and some bad things going on. Sari, you're our guest. So we'll allow you to go first. What's good and bad?
I'll go thorns first and then roses. Look, I just read the article. Jennifer Senior just published an article in the New York Times today about the like working and parenting, and basically was like, you know, we're not just work, like we are homeschooling, stay-at-home parenting, and working all at the same time, and it just continues to be impossible, though obviously possible because we're doing it day after day. So like that's just an ongoing thorn of like my three-year-old walking around being, mommy has a call, daddy has a call, nobody's playing with me, right? And this like sad, and I'm like, But I will say the rose is that the last 3 days I have gotten out with one or both of my children to go for a hike. And I am feeling, even though I'm a lifelong New Yorker and I miss New York in my soul, I'm feeling very thankful that I have that ability and that it's open. And my kids were very good about wearing masks when they needed to, but we also were able to take them off and breathe fresh air. And I felt like a new person. So that was a big rose this week.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. Leia, what about you?
I mean, the thorn is the same. And the way I kind of talk about it is like, if I only had to do one of those things, like just parenting or just working or just
even that would be hard.
Even that would be hard. And I'd probably only be like at 60%. And so I'm like at 30% at all three things. I'm just not doing really well at any one thing. My rose.
You should read this article. I'm going to send you this article.
She wrote All Joy, No Fun, right?
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Okay. I knew that name.
Yeah.
I love that idea. Yeah. The rose in all of that is that I didn't teach, I teach social work students. And so I wasn't teaching for the January semester, and I'm teaching two classes for the May semester, and they just started last week. And I was like, oh, this is going to be so hard because I haven't taught in a while and quarantine and all that stuff. And it has just been great. My students are great.
That's so good.
I feel like I'm doing a good job, even though we're only 2 weeks in. Sort of a good reminder that like in all of this stuff, there are things that I'm still good at and that hopefully will not change. So that was a really good reminder. I also have to keep reminding myself that because I work for a university that has an online program and I'm completely online, that I did not have to relearn how to do my job. So that has been a big, 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 big rose, strawberry, diamond, whatever. Wow.
Wow.
I mean, we've seen that with the school system is everybody trying to scramble to learn how to bring it online. My bitch is, in trying to find different things to do to pass the time in quarantine, pulled out a jigsaw puzzle.
We've done like 9.
So I don't even know where we got it. This Star Wars jigsaw puzzle, and we had lost the cover, so we didn't have the picture.
Oh, that's
which hard. By itself, like that would be annoying. And I was pretty much like, can we just not do this? Can we just do another puzzle? But I ended up like Googling it and finding the puzzle and finding the image. But I mean, there's so many things I could have done to make this easier on myself, but I just had the link to the website on my phone. And so anytime I would go to like do the puzzle, I have to go to the link and open the picture and be like, look at it on a tiny little screen, looking at it. And so I was working on this for like a little bit at a time for probably like 2 months, give or take, like 15 minutes a night. Finally got to the end and there was a piece missing.
Oh.
And I was so angry about that, but not like I was angry, but not really.
Right. Yeah.
But then I was really angry because I was getting something out of the closet for us to go on a hike. And there was the fucking box. And I was like, ooh.
Oh, MAGA.
Oh God. That really got me. My rose is, my oldest son. And I, again, we talk about that there are positives, as weird as it seems, during a global pandemic. But I've really done a lot of bike riding with my older son, and I probably have talked about this on previous podcasts, but the city of Brookhaven, where we live in Atlanta, has 15 parks. And they had this, May is National Bike Month. So this challenge to ride your bike to all 15 parks and take a picture of yourself at it. And for whatever reason, Jamie, my oldest, was just like all about it.
That's so great. You never know what's going to motivate them.
You really don't. And Jamie, at least in this way, is similar to me in that like, yeah, if I don't want to do something, it's really hard to get me to do it. But if I'm into it, I'm into it all the way and we'll tackle whatever needs to be tackled to get it done. So he was really into it. And so we, over the last couple weeks, have ridden all around, I say the city, it's not that big of a place, but 6 miles here, 9 miles there, et cetera, et cetera.
That's great.
And knocked out all 15 parks. So we submitted it to their contest page And we got an email back from the woman, and he is the first person to do it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
that
very,
is so great, Jamie.
I know. I'm very proud of him.
I'm so proud.
We had a good time doing it. He had a really good time. And so, you know, look, we would not have taken the time to do that.
Sure.
Or really had the time to do that if we weren't where we were. I'd still, it's not a fair trade. I'd still prefer the opposite. But it has been nice. So that's definitely my rose. And with that, that is our show. Again, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, any other podcast listening tools you can find. If you want to follow us on social media, we are on Facebook and Twitter at Summer Camp Pod and on Instagram at Campfires and Color Wars. As we are recording this, we are still in quarantine, which means at least for now, if you're looking for non-Indigo Girls quarantine content, you should definitely check out Jewish Geography Zoom Racing, which we are streaming live every Saturday night on our Facebook page.
I was so close.
Eastern. What'd you say?
I almost made it on. I was so close.
Your name came up a few times.
I know.
That was a very, if you haven't seen it, this past week's episode with Jar, John Adam Ross, and Sarah Beth Berman was quite a doozy. The fastest game we've seen thus far. Check it out. We're doing it every Saturday night at 9. It's a lot of fun. We've been enjoying doing it. It's been a nice way to pass the time in quarantine. What else have you got to do? That's kind of the unofficial tagline of the show. If you want to send us your memories of Indigo Girls or nominate another band that you specifically associate with camp, you can always send us an email at summercamppod@gmail.com. If you want to hear more from me, I'm on Twitter at Micah Hart. Sari, if people want to find you online, where can they?
I am on Twitter, probably more than I should be, at Rabbi Laufer.
Okay. Leah, if people want to find you online, is there somewhere we can direct them?
I mean, I'm on the Facebook. I'm kind of on the Instagram. I don't really understand it. And I'm not on the Twitter. I'm old.
Well, I think I can speak for everybody when I say we look very, very much forward to, I'm trying to think of a clever name for your Indigo Girls podcast.
Cool.
Closest to fine.
Ooh, closer, that's good.
Closerer to fine. I don't
closerer.
Know.
Closerer.
We'll workshop it. Right. But if it's not out there yet, I mean, it's got to be.
There's
I've yet to see a passion that someone has that doesn't have.
I'm obviously going to go searching.
Podcast. Associated.
All right, Sari, it's you and me.
With that, we will say goodnight. And Sari, we always like to end each episode with the saying our dad used to say at camp, the time is precious, and you got to make the most of it. So we say, don't waste a minute, Sari, and you can say back to us.
Don't waste a minute.
You got it.
Well done.
Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself be. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs.